All right. Well, thank you everyone for being here. We are here week 7, the final week of the Christian and Technology. For those who have been here, as you know, our goal has been first to critically assess our technology and then to critically assess ourselves. Critically assess our technology and then critically assess ourselves. So by looking at Scripture, by looking at different biblical principles, we first tried to understand, okay, what are the threats that technology presents? Right? We started a bit more external, but then we shifted and we looked more internally, right? We said, internally, what are the heart postures that our technology reveals? What is our technology actually teaching us about us? And as we did that, we covered a handful of topics, right? We looked at smartphones, we looked at the digital world, we looked at parenting a bit. Now, we obviously couldn't cover everything, but that's why we established a framework, almost like a grid that we could run our technology through so that we could understand the threats a bit better and then understand the heart postures a bit better as well. So that's why we came up with, if you were here last week, Tinsel. Tinsel's what we came up with. The four questions we had: to what degree does my technology tempt me to sin? Tempt, that's the T. In what ways does it influence my emotions or desire? Influence, that's the IN, 10. Am I using my technology to supplement God's design or replace God's design? That's our S. And then how is it helping me to leverage my gifts and talents to glorify God? Leverage, that's our L-E, Tinsel. That's how we got there. Now, if you're looking up here, you can see that this week is going to be a little bit different than our past weeks. This is going to be more of a panel discussion with some of the best experts that we could find. So before we get started, I do want to take just a quick minute for our panelists to introduce themselves. I'm guessing most of you probably know most of these people, but if you wouldn't mind, just go ahead and share your name, the topic that you're going to discuss, and then maybe just like a quick comment on your background in relation to that topic. So name, topic, and then background in relation to that topic. So we'll start right here.
Okay. I'm Anna Grace. I'm a member here at Gospel Grace. And I just got back in September from doing my master's degree in theology and the arts. But I did my thesis on AI produced art and theology. So to do that, I had to wade through a lot of ethical implications around AI and what it means to have AI in our world and to interact with it. So that is what I'll focus on, more the ethical side.
Awesome, thanks.
My name is Jotun. I serve as one of the pastors here at Gospel Grace. I'm just a user of technology. I build technology and I use it in my work all the time. And some of the things that I'm interested to talk about are AI, but broadly other things as well. I've been able to interact with Isaac on this class quite a bit, and I've enjoyed that. And I'm looking forward to the discussion.
I'm Josh. I'm one of the pastors here as well. And the two ways in which this probably intersects: one is my pastoral role. I'm a family pastor, and so my area of speaking is on the family side, or on the parental side. I also have three boys, 16, 13, 11, and so I'm in the thick of it with technology and kids and what that looks like, so that would be that side.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. So kind of just give you an overview of what this is going to look like. We are going to start our discussion looking at AI. So I have a couple quick questions for Jotham and Anna Grace, and they have a bit prepared related to AI. So we'll start our discussion there. I'll then transition to Pastor Josh. I asked him to speak a bit about parenting and technology. I think especially with boys in those teen years, there's a unique perspective that he could give as we think through parenting and technology. And then the rest of the time, we actually just want to open it up to you guys. So hopefully you've had time to think a bit from last week, or even over these next few minutes, begin thinking about questions. And this could be AI related. This could be parenting and technology. It could be anything we've covered in the class to this point, or just technology questions in general. We'd love to answer your questions. I joked about this. We definitely are not experts, but we will do our best to answer whatever questions you guys have related to those topics. So with that, let's transition to some AI. I'll start with you, Jotham. Now, I'm assuming most people here have some understanding of what AI is. I think, especially over the past 1 to 2 years, it feels like it's just exploded and is integrating into everything. However, I think there are a lot of theological and ethical implications that Christians are wrestling through with this topic. So I guess my question, Jotham, is what are some of the theological considerations for AI that we should be having, right? We have this new technology, it's a bit hard to understand. We don't want to just think practically, we want to think theologically, looking at scripture also. So what are some theological considerations we should have?
So when we talk about AI, I'm just going to lay the groundwork. We're talking about generative AI. So we're talking about AI that we interact with, so not the AI that you see in your fridge. Right, so that's a different kind of AI. That the fridge isn't asking an AI a question. It's just machine learning. So there are different ways that, you know, AI is used as a term. So right now, I'm going to speak primarily from a generative AI perspective. So you ask a question and the AI responds, right? There are a few challenges, but I'm going to talk about overarching challenges, and then I'm going to give a couple of quick other things. The overarching challenge with AI, I think, is the temptation to anthropomorphize it. And I know that's a big word, but the idea is really simple, that you begin to engage with it like it's a person, and then begin to transfer some of the benefits that you would give to people onto this AI. And then second, you would begin to source some of the benefits that you ought to source from people from this AI, right? So I think the overarching challenge with AI, and this bleeds out in different ways, and I'll talk about that, is that you can begin to anthropomorphize it. And I think we've kind of taken a step towards being able to do that. So 20 years ago, all relationships were people-centric, so I had to know Jesse in person, spend time with him, to really get to know who Jesse was. We went from that to being social media. Like, it's completely normal for us to interact with the avatar of a person. We don't really need to know the person. You can have his or her Facebook profile and feel like you can have a genuine relationship with this person via text, via non-embodied conversation, right? And now we're going to a place where this avatar or this non-embodied representation of a person can be generated by a non-embodied person itself, that's AI, right? So we've kind of trained ourselves where this is normal, and we can take that one step further and go, well, this entity that I'm dealing with is a normal entity. So some of the really simple theological challenges and things to remember is that this person isn't a person. Like, there is no image of God in AI. There is no inherent value outside the value that we ascribe to it that is ontologically or by nature of it there in it, right? And the second one is it doesn't push back like a normal person would. Right? You can slap an AI around and it would just say, all right, have you ever tried to say something really mean to Alexa just to figure out what Alexa would say back, right? Try saying that to your friend, right? It doesn't push back in the same way. So I think there's a challenge to answer before. And that would be the overarching one. Some really simple bullet points would be the challenge of quick knowledge. So Dunning-Kruger effect, you know a little about something, you're really proud about the little bit that you know. If you don't know Dunning-Kruger effect, go Google it, look at the picture, it's kind of funny. And the challenge of wrongly sourced knowledge. I think the Christian life requires that knowledge and wisdom is really gained relationally. It is gained theologically, and it is gained, I have three terms here, relationally, experientially, and intellectually, right? Mm. Those are the three things that really work together to create wisdom. And the challenge with AI is that you would tend to just take one part of it and not the others. God wants a believer to be in the church and to be under pastors and teachers and community who are going to cut out the rough edges, and without that, knowledge just puffs up and does not create lama. So those would be kind of the overarching things that I would think of.
Awesome. Thank you. That's helpful. That's helpful in thinking through personhood, right? Like, what is AI in that, AI in that sense, as well as just some limitations of how we can use it. So that's helpful. Turning, I guess, to some further ethical and practical things, Anna Grace, you researched AI and art in your master's, which I think is two fascinating topics to bring together, see how they relate to each other. So if you wouldn't mind, would you mind sharing a little bit about, I guess, first, just what that study taught you, and then perhaps how we can begin thinking about AI from an ethical perspective. So what that taught you, and then an ethical perspective.
Yeah. I think as I read throughout last year, I came across two very unhelpful approaches to thinking ethically about AI. And then actually, I think this gospel growth has been laying the groundwork for a very helpful ethical approach to AI. So I'll go through the two unhelpful ones, and then I'll circle back and maybe apply some of the principles you've talked about to show maybe a more helpful approach. So like one unhelpful ethical approach is an ungrounded ethical system. So this would be an ethical system that seeks to benefit the majority or that mimics a widely accepted perception of good and evil. But the more I read, and you guys probably know this, the more it's very obvious that people don't agree about what good and evil is, let alone a standard for AI ethics. So our ethical engagement needs to have a deeper grounding than just the current majority perception of what good and evil is. Another unhelpful approach is like a misgrounded approach, so grounding in maybe the wrong thing. And this comes when we base our ethical system in our understanding of AI itself. Stephen Driscoll writes this book, which is super helpful, would recommend. And he describes this as a futuristic approach where we piece together an ethical system based on our predictions of what AI can or can't do. For example, if we think AI is capable of making better decisions than us, then it makes sense that we would think it would be ethical to let to allow something as self-driving cars. So our ethics are based on what we think AI can or can't do. The problem with this, though, is when over and over it's happened that AI has surpassed our expectations or has shattered our expectations of what it can or can't do. And when this happens, we often fall back on our gut responses of fear in AI or technology, or over-optimism in AI. So this just also is a very unsteady way to build an ethical approach. So I think our ethical approach to AI needs to have a little bit more stable grounding than just our own shallow understanding of what AI currently is or what it could become, because we really don't know. I think one thing that has been great in this class is that we've been slowly building the groundwork for a healthy ethical approach, one that's actually grounded in theology. And Stephen Driscoll, in this book, calls this a principled approach. This groundwork is not based on our knowledge of AI or like a common consensus of what good and evil is. I think what is helpful is not just a theological grounding, but a grounding in a doctrine of creation that's connected to the word. Because, for example, if we believe that God created us body and soul and called it very good, then this commitment, this theological commitment, can act as a grounding ethical principle. For example, if we believe that it's good that God created us body and soul, then any use of an AI application that begins to degrade this union of body and soul should be used with caution or rejected. I'm thinking specifically now of like AI dating apps or pornography that sells an experience that God only intended to take place between two holistically committed people. So do you see how the theological principle is actually feeding into an ethical approach to AI? Another one is that God chose to make us and intended to have a relationship with us. this also can act as an ethical principle, because if our AI use begins to diminish our ability to sit and contemplate God, if it drains our ability to concentrate on one thing or meditate on Him, then we should be aware of that influence and act accordingly. AI does influence us. It changes how we think. Our tools affect us and they change us. So technology is a gift, but they do change us. And so I guess as nuanced ethical situations continue to arise, then our grounding our ethical engagement on a doctrine of creation can give us the principles to live by, to avoid the knee-jerk reactions of fear and optimism, and just continue to love God in the middle of a world with AI.
Awesome. Thank you. That's super helpful. Yeah. It's interesting. You really can't disconnect the theological, ethical implications. They're so intertwined. And yeah, I appreciate even just the different frameworks initially that we build off of, right? There's so many just initial things we need to think through for ethical frameworks. So that's really helpful. Now, if you have more AI questions, we'll do those with the time we have at the end. But before we do, I want to turn to Josh. As I mentioned, I think you can provide a helpful perspective on something I cannot speak to, which is having teen boys with technology. Whether parenting has gotten easier or harder, I think we can at least agree that the advancement of technology has complicated things, right? More and more the world is integrated, more and more kids are online. So I just want to ask almost more of a general question, and you can answer this however you want, but are there either certain principles that have been helpful when thinking through your kids' use of technology, right? It could be phones, video games, computers, anything, or even like specific habits or life rhythms that have been helpful for your family. So more general principles or specific habits in life rhythms.
Okay. I wasn't sure who was gonna be in here too. And as I look around, I see a few who have small kids, like I saw a few small kids. And I think a bunch of you who are probably in more of the theoretical and planning stage on this one. So let me kind of give you a couple things that I think might help on that end. Maybe some principles that maybe just tuck in the back of your mind. And if you want to dig deeper, any of you, I would love to on this side. You're going to need to set some boundary. You're just going to have to. We do it on every other area of life, right? Hygiene and education and all kinds of things. So you're going to need to set some level of boundaries, but think through that one. I would say this, though, too. Aim for the heart, not the device. Aim for the heart, not the device. As a parent, we can try to do device restriction, where really all of parenting is about heart guidance and heart development on the end. We can try to, out of our fear of the dangers and fear of the bad and the realities of the danger and the bad in technology, want to just go whoop and restrict down and be like, well, they'll deal with it when they're 18. Well, that's an Amish and an unwise approach. Right? We're not just going to shun. This is a beautiful time. So if you don't have kids, or if you have young kids, or you think about this, parenting is a beautiful space for you to guide your child, the one God gave you, into a life of discerning how to do life wisely. Right? So on that end, even technology needs to be done wisely. I think a lot of you, I'm looking, don't even have children. Now is that you're actually planting seeds towards parenting by how you think about your use of technology, by how you use technology. When you have kids, you're going to model how to use technology. You're modeling already. You're planning already. So I think guard and guide your heart with technology, and let that be a way in which you're going to help your own kids. I'm just going to say something. I don't know how many, there are many dads in here, but dads, you're going to have to lead your own life, and you're going to have to lead your family. And you're going to have to do that well. You're going to have to know your own kids. This can be very overwhelming. For those who are parents and who are fearful, your own kids are going to have unique struggles and difficulties, and you're going to have to prayerfully discern how to lead them on that end. And it can be overwhelming, and you'd be like, I don't even know how to do this. But in most areas of life, it is overwhelming if we're trying to do life for the glory of God. So let me just give a few quick encouragements. We are not up to the task on our own. Whether it's your own use for technology or parenting or dating or life, let's just expand it. You're not up to the task on your own, period. But greater is He who's in you than He who's in the world. So be encouraged, right? So on those ends. I won't go deep into this one, but there are a lot of practical things, like what type of devices we have chosen for our kids based on our ability to manage it and help it. I have an 11, 13, and 16, but going from young ages in interaction up to high schoolers in interaction, gradients of usage and what that looks like, what we do even with practical stuff like internet use at our home and router-based protection and help and things like that. So there's a lot of practical things I can go into. There you go. I'll probably stop.
Yeah.
But if you ever want to talk, I would love to talk with you guys.
Awesome.
Thank you. That's super helpful. Yeah. I appreciate your comment on not just device management, but we're shaping their hearts, right? And so much flows out of that. So that's super helpful. So yeah, I'd love to hear from you guys. If you have a question, I can just call people. Feel free to stand up and just say it so everyone can hear it. And we'll do that for the rest of the time. Yeah, Liz.
So one of the things that I think about starts really, really early is literally avoid toys with batteries and simply entertain. Because you're setting the tone for the baby or the children to expect to be entertained. And I love toys that interact instead. And that just sets the tone for them to engage, not be played to. If that makes any sense.
Mm. When my kids were growing up, the whole social media thing was just getting started, so it was pretty benign. But we had a desktop computer and we kept it in the kitchen so I could see what was going on. Steven played video games right in the living room where I could see. But it's so much different now that they didn't have smartphones.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think that they had, I would have taken them before they went to bed. Literally.
Yeah.
Once Steven mouthed off at me before I got on the bus and I said, that's it, you lost your phone for the day, so you just try to take it. I went on Verizon and killed him. And he came home pretty humble. This is a deacon now, right? And I said, food, shelter, and some of your college education, that's what we're doing anymore, is gravy. And if I have to take the door off the door, I will. I was a mean mom. But it's a privilege, not a right. And I've seen kids struggle with not wanting to be on social media, but all of their social events are announced by the club on social media.
Yeah.
And so that's the patient. Just have to really help them know how to curate their feed.
Yeah.
One of my adult children has done that. She has cut down so much contact. She says, we're not supposed to be in contact with so many people.
Mm.
And it's just curated her followers and what she posts to be edified.
Yeah.
That's pretty mature. She's 26, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's helpful. That's really helpful. Any comments from either the parents or any thoughts on that? Yeah. No, that's helpful. Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Liz. That's really helpful. Yeah.
Sean.
Sean? All right, we'll start with Sean. Sean's over there. There we go.
You guys shared some really helpful warnings about some of the dangers. And I wonder if you have any positive aspects you could share, maybe along with, maybe specifically in parenting, but not necessarily, but like ways in which you're able to use maybe AI or just technology more generally to kind of leverage your, you know, interactions with your kids, parenting, or more generally, just kind of more positive side.
Yeah, I'll talk about it probably from a work perspective. I've been able to incorporate AI tools to increase my efficiency in certain tasks by over, over 200%. So I've been able to cut down to about a third of the time in certain tasks without question. Right? Yeah, I guess I did approach it from a more dangerous,
because
probably some of the things are implicit in terms of how we can use it positively. So that would be from a work perspective. From children, I don't know if I have very young children, not yet, I guess. Though I have used it to create, this is a funny one, I have used it to create simplified versions of certain biblical texts to teach them to my children. So when I've run out of ideas of how to explain a certain text, I have often gone and I've queried the responses and tried to create simple versions to be able to illustrate things to my kids and help them understand it.
That's helpful.
I don't know if there's a follow-up to that.
Yeah.
I think your kids are growing up in a world of technology. So it's just a reality on that end. And there are so many blessings and benefits of it. So I've got one kiddo who's like, I'm going to be an engineer. And he's already learning a ton and engaging a ton and really developing on those ends through the use of technology. That's great. Utilize who God made him to be, you know, and help him grow on those ends.
Yeah, that's helpful. Awesome. All right, I think we have time for maybe one more. Did I see one over here?
Pretty similar.
So okay.
There's someone that's a little different.
Perfect, yeah. Maybe one more question, if there are any.
Does using AI for your work and cutting down on the time spent, do you find that you're less introspective on the tasks you're using AI for than you would be otherwise?
Great question. So it depends on what kind of tasks. Like, so the kind of AI that I use is essentially predicting what I'm going to write and helping you. So it's code, right? So,
right. So
it's trying to read the code and kind of predict what you write. I think in the, I'll maybe switch your question just a little bit. I do think there's a formative, so Anna Grace talked about the formative aspect of certain tasks. So writing a paper about a certain topic is formative. You could obviously get it done quicker with AI. Here's my broad argument, write a paper for me. But I think the articulation in your own mind does form you and make you better. So it depends on what the purpose of the task is. Like, is there a learning aspect to this task? And am I shortchanging it by using an AI? And I think if there was a learning task, I would probably refrain from using it because it does take away from, so I wouldn't use it to write a paper, you know, but I would use it to write something that I know exactly what's gonna put it down. Kind of like, yeah.
Joachim, along that same line, I use AI all the time, but I don't use it to create, I use it to edit. So I wanted to edit and clarify what I have written.
Yeah.
I don't use it to create for me, and that's a huge difference. It makes it much faster to edit and make things like clearer.
For work, I have more kind of standing operating procedure. So I just threw that into AI to get some ideas. But it's like anything else, you have to vet with what you already know. I'm not copying the whole thing. It's like, oh, that's a good thought. No, I don't like that. And I know some students who will source use AI to source literature review for a paper. But you still have to read that literature to find out why you want to source it.
Yeah. Any questions? I'm gonna help Isaac.
Yeah.
Class. Any questions here? I know we're throwing out different users, but I have any residual questions that Anna Grace, I mean, I would encourage you guys to talk to Anna Grace. She's, you know, her old master's dissertation was on the idea of art and AI and message and form, and
mm-hmm.
you know, she'd be a great resource if you're in that. Any final questions? We're almost done.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think we'll land the plane there. But can we just thank the guests real quick? Can we give them a hand? Yeah, thank you so much. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, guys. Hopefully this class has been helpful. I've had a lot of fun. I hope you've had fun. Hopefully there are some principles you can take, whether it's specific technologies we talked about or even just the framework. Hopefully that can be a helpful thing you can take with you. And as a final encouragement, you know, technology is changing, culture is changing. This will continue to shift. In 10 years, it'll probably be something different, but God is not changing. God is sovereign. God is reigning and ruling, whatever direction culture goes, and we are just called to faithfulness, to seek him, to follow him, and we can trust him in that. So thanks so much for the past few weeks. This has been great. You guys are dismissed. See you guys later.